Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of React Roundup. I will be your host today, Paige Niedringhaus, and I am joined by our current regular panelist, TJ Vantol.
Hey, everybody.
And we have a new panelist to introduce who will be joining us for future episodes, Jack Harrington.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing good. So, Jack, for anybody who is not as familiar with you, do you want to give yourself a quick intro to our audience?
Sure. I'm primarily a YouTuber. I run a channel called The Blue Collar Coder, where I talk about advanced React topics, including today's topic, which would be the different forms of rendering that we use.
That's an A-plus segue, man. You've got this down already. See, maybe you can lay out
I think I hit like the 250 YouTube videos thing. So if I can't do intros, I don't know.
So I think we're going to talk about what, okay, we've got three different approaches we're talking about, right? So we've got client-side rendering, we've got server-side rendering, and then static site generation. So why don't you just like lay out things, like why don't we start by defining what all three of these options are, just for everybody to sort of set the stage, maybe we can go from there.
Sure, and I love the way that you kind of sequence those out, so that's the way I'll handle it too.
Did you work your tail off to get that senior developer gig just to realize that senior dev doesn't actually mean dream job? I've been there too. My first senior developer job was at a place where all of our triumphs were the bosses and all the failures were ours. The second one was a great place to continue to learn and grow, only for it to go under due to poor management. And now I get job offers from great places to work all the time. Not only that, but the last job interview I actually sat in was a discussion about how much my podcast had helped the people interviewing me. If you're looking for a way to get into your dream job, then join our Dev Heroes Accelerator. Not only will we help you get the kind of exposure that makes you attractive to your dream employer, but you'll be able to ask them for top dollar as well. Check it out at devheroesaccelerator.com.
So CSR, client-side rendering, is something that you see in a Create React app, right? The idea is you get essentially a blank page from the server. It's got a script bundle attached to it. Then the client loads up that blank page. It then starts rendering or running your JavaScript, which runs your React app, and then renders that into the frame, that little app tag that we all have in there.
Yep.
And so that's all done on the client, thus client-side rendering. So server-side rendering is where you've got a server. The server gets a request. That request has a route. It then goes and it usually goes and gets some data. Let's take it as an example, like a product detail page for a basketball, right? And it goes off, gets some information about the basketball, puts it probably in like a Redux store or some sort of store, and then it then renders that React app. It renders that to a string, puts that in a template, shoots that off to the server or to the client, and then the client starts rendering it again. And that's kind of an interesting thing to talk about. And that's called server-side rendering. And it takes a little time on both the server and the client to get that out there. And then static site generation is when you do that essentially at build time for all of your pages. So you go through, say, your entire product catalog, your basketballs, your baseballs, whatever your products are, or whatever your homepage or your blog or whatever it is. And you do that kind of rendering, and then you render it all to files, and then you put all those files up on, say, S3 or some object store, and that's your site. And the great thing about it is that you don't actually have to monitor servers anymore, which for somebody who might not want to get woken up at 2 a.m. with a server being down P0, thing, right? That's a huge advantage there to not having that server.
Yeah. Probably just to break down the three, client-side rendering is probably what most React developers are doing. If you're listening to this, you have a React app deployed, it's kind of the default option that most people are doing. And even broader than React, I think most front-end apps, if you're using Angular, if you're using Vue or whatever, you're probably client-side rendering. That's sort of the default behavior of this. So maybe we could start by, because there's a lot of different angles we could take this, what are the benefits of doing server-side rendering or static site generation? Because each of those will be if people haven't done those before, there'll be a curveball from your sort of traditional React 101 type development setup.
Yeah, I mean, if you're using something like Create React App to get up and running quickly, which is what most tutorials and people getting into it will start with, that is what you would consider client-side rendering. There's no server-side generation. There's no dealing with any of that. But on the other hand, if you're using something like Gatsby, which is a static site generator, or Next, which can do static site generation, server side rendering, and basically everything. Next is like the ultimate Swiss Army knife for React at this point.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Those are kind of the, I think, the main flavors and the main players in the React community. But from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I very well may be misinformed, what I get is that server-side rendering or even static site generation is for SEO purposes a lot of times, because Google can't crawl what it can't see in single-page applications, since they are only a single page where we're injecting everything client-side. There's nothing for Google to index and know that your site is around and available, especially if you're doing something that you need to make products available to users, or you have blog posts that you want to help build your community out, or whatever. So that's kind of my basic understanding of, you know, some of the benefits as well as some of the issues that come along with server-side rendering, because I know that it's not as easy to get started with typically.
Yeah, I was at Nike and I was also at Walmart. So obviously SEO is like a huge thing for us. And so we had a lot of conversations with the SEO folks around server-side rendering and static site generation, which, yeah, absolutely. Traditionally, you'd say yes, 100%, tags are there, everything's great. But Google can crawl JavaScript and has had that for some time. Now their only issues are if you're rendering differently for them than you are for the customer, then there might be an issue. But there are some third-party sites out there that basically go between you and the bot and the Googlebot, and then they'll basically render your page for you and set that up for the Googlebot. So and that's okay, apparently. So I think there that whole maybe... And there's probably some contention around this. Maybe CSR is fine for SEO. So,
yeah. And I think, like, to me, the benefits of both server-side rendering and static site generation, I feel like I need to like bust into the acronyms at some point to start spelling them out.
Yeah.
But to me, the benefits are all about performance, because in different kinds of performance, because it gets complicated. But if you're just using React on the client side, that you're shipping a bunch of JavaScript to your users. And sometimes that JavaScript has to do like tasks. Like, for example, like we'll use the basketball example, because we'll be a basketball shop, I guess, for this episode. if you're using React to build your basketball store and you're using the client side only, well, then your users are going to download all the JavaScript they need to render your basketball store. And then after they've gotten that JavaScript, they then have to go out to the server and say, oh, well, what products do I have available here that I need to show? Whereas if you server rendered that bit of your app, then essentially you would bake in the products directly into the JavaScript bundle that your users downloaded, so that essentially when they get that JavaScript payload, they wouldn't have to then make another round trip to the server to get the basketballs, because those would be baked in. So like little techniques like that, like that's obviously one of the more simplistic things you can do, but that's the idea. Like if the server renders it, then it essentially you're just making it faster for your users, because you're avoiding some round trips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, performance is definitely one thing that you need to consider for it, especially if you have something that is a public facing application or website how are your users going to be accessing it? What kind of internet access will they have? And definitely bundling it ahead of time with server side or with static site generation, so everything is just built and ready, is a big thing to keep in your consideration. For my particular instance, the work that I do for the Home Depot, we're actually an internal application. So our users are all very homogenous in what they have access to. You know, they have to be on our VPN network. They have to use the Home Depot issued laptops that they have to do their work. So something like Create React App was great for us. And in addition to the fact that the application that we build is pretty data intensive. So we need to have servers. We have lots of microservices that support our application behind the scenes. But like you are saying, if it's something that's more static, like a website that maybe just has a contact us form and some informational text or something like that, it might be that a server rendered or a static site might be a great option for you. It really depends on what your needs are and how interactive, I guess, your site is going to be, is a big chunk of it.
Yeah, it always comes back to that unsatisfying answer that people give, which is, it depends. In your case, obviously, at Home Depot, because it's an internal application, CSR is fine. I would say, of the SSR shops that I've been on, the server was a problem. I mean, you're going to have like a cluster of them, and then you're going to have a pod of clusters or whatever. And that becomes like a maintenance issue and all that. And they've been trying really aggressively to get to static site generation. So figuring out all the little issues in there. And there's a couple of nice reasons for that. When you go and do that page, then getting that basketball information is done way early, right? It's done at build time. And then you've got that HTML page, which serving off of S3 is going to take like 4 milliseconds versus 200 to 500 milliseconds if you're on a good day with SSR kind of thing. So there's a huge performance benefit to that, to the time to first byte, which people monitor a lot. Yeah, and again, you're not having to watch that server. And there's some really cool little things that you can do to get around the limitations of static with micro front ends, where you can go and say, okay, well, this part of the page is like the product carousel, for example, is the really dynamic part. And you can basically just kind of leave an area open for that to kind of pop in later. So you can do these nice little hybrid solutions where you're not completely stuck on static site generation, which may favor like a product catalog that's very slow moving versus server side rendering, where, you know, you're constantly, you know, sending out new pages all the time. And yeah, there's just so many little options in here.
So I've heard about micro front ends and I've looked into it a little bit, but can you give me a better idea of how that works? Like, are they really individual applications that are running? And then maybe there's like an Nginx server or something that's proxying so that it looks like it's the same app, but they're really not, they're separate apps.
So if you're familiar with bundle splitting in Webpack, mm-hmm. you know, it's essentially that kind of where you haven't built everything off a single code base. You're now kind of bringing in bundles that have been split out from another build process, right? And that might be like the product carousel or something like that. And that can be built independently of the main app and then referenced kind of loosely. So there's a nice addition to Webpack 5 that came out called Module Federation that allows you to just import those externalized modules just like you would regular code that you bundled into your app with an import statement. There's also System.js, which is on top, which they use on underneath Single Spa, and that also gives you the ability to kind of load that stuff asynchronously. So the idea is that you could have this host app, right, that basketball page, right, with that little area in there to put in that product carousel, and you go and asynchronously load in that project carousel, maybe on an intersection observer or something like that. Those modules come in, but they still share that same React context, right? So you're still resharing React with those, and you just kind of render them out like you would in any kind of asynchronous code. So it's really nice. And the nice thing is that you can actually version that stuff independently of the main app.
Yeah, I think in general, like my advice usually to people is, because all of these approaches introduce some sort of complexity. Like you said, like with SSR, it's, well, now you have to have servers and you get all the complexity of now you need a service to pay for the servers. Those servers can go down. You need to think about that. Think about what handles that. So in general, I usually encourage people to start with whatever React workflow just makes sense to you, right? If it's Create React App or whatever. And then when you hit some sort of problem, like, oh, I'm having performance issues, then you can look into some of these more advanced techniques or maybe completely different approaches. Because nowadays with React, there's frameworks and such that it's all just React code. I think honestly, you could realistically migrate some of, like, if you had a React app and you decided you needed to sprinkle in some SSR stuff, you know, there are ways of doing that. You don't necessarily have to throw out your entire code base if you want to mix things up a little bit.
Oh yeah, no, not at all. I mean, with Next.js, as Paige said, right? It's, you can give it pretty much, and it'll handle any model you've got, which is really nice. And so you can statically generate some of your pages, you can server-side render some of your other pages and kind of turn off the server-side rendering on other pages and make it client-side rendered. You have all the options at your fingertips, and you can just sort of scale it whatever way you want, which is really great.
One thing that I know server-side rendering is a big proponent of, or maybe it's just Next in particular, is rehydration. Do either of you have a lot of experience because I honestly haven't used it too much myself. You could talk a little bit more about what that is and how that works.
Okay. Sure. So yeah, well, okay. So I guess there's two aspects of it. There's sort of storing all the data that you create, that you got for the request, right? Yeah. That basketball information that's going to be managed by Next.js for you. They does a really, really nice job of it. And it's agnostic to the point where you don't have to say it's got to be a Redux store or else it's no good. You can use MobX or just nothing. You can use whatever you want to manage your state like that. So that's one part of it. And then there's this like reconcile phase, which is kind of this hidden gotcha in this whole system, which is you get all this page that goes to the client and it's beautiful. It's got everything laid out. It's great. Looks awesome. And then you run your React app and it's basically got to go and rebuild the VDOM for that page and then compare it and reconcile it with the page that's already there. And that's like this extra little time between when the customer actually sees something that they feel like they can interact with. But the problem is they can't because the browser is busy chowing through all of this JavaScript trying to get the page into a running state. And so that can be an issue there as well. And I don't think really anybody's figured out a good fix for that because that's just React. You know, you need a VDOM and that's just how it works.
Yeah. So another tech that sort of plays into this, I'm hesitant to bring up like new terms because I feel like one issue with this topic is it gets overwhelming when you throw like different acronyms and different technologies at it. But the React team is also working on React server components, which kind of plays into this conversation as well. But I think like server components are going to be just almost like a more advanced way of doing server-side rendering and is probably something like individual developers won't get into. It's more like under the hood, Next we'll just be able to do more interesting things. Other frameworks will be able to do more interesting things. But I think it is a sign that there's a lot of interest in these types of approaches, that a lot of people are using it, that the React team itself is looking into ways to optimize these processes and make them better for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's talk really recently on Twitter about React 18. They're starting to do some beta testing and I guess focus groups around how it should work and what it should be. And I know that Suspense is being talked about again, which everybody has been dying to see for 2+ years. I know. And it just keeps getting pushed off and kicked down the road because it's a really hard thing that they're trying to solve. But that too is probably going to be a massive game changer in terms of how difficult it is to do some of the stuff that we're trying to do now and these frameworks are trying to solve for us when it actually gets stabilized and finalized and becomes a thing. It may be that in the next couple of years, we won't even have to think about any of this stuff anymore. It'll just happen for us without our even knowing it, which would be great. That'd be the best.
It would be nice. It does feel like Suspense has fallen into the category of like context. Remember back in the day when it was like context is there, but don't use it. You know, we're going to change this thing. It's, you know, oh. And then we all used it anyway. We're like, yeah, whatever. We'll just deal with it. And it was fine. But now, right, we've got use context and create context and all that. And it's fine. It definitely, Suspense is one of those things where there are a couple of frameworks out there where I know what a state manager for sure, Jotai, is like, well, you know, got to have a Suspense for this one. And it's like, yeah, but it's usable. So use it. It's fine.
Yeah. Breaking changes be damned.
At a certain point, I mean, how stable does it have to be?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think there's always a difference between if it's stable enough for React, because they have to worry about every edge case ever. Whereas like if you're using an experimental API and you're going through your normal testing workflow, QA workflow, and it works for you, then you're probably fine, even though it's experimental, because you don't have to worry about all the edge cases and the crazy situations that React itself has to worry about. I mean, the only thing you potentially have to worry about is upgrading, that if in the future they change the API. But honestly, like, it's if it's solving a problem for you, like an experimental API, then I mean, it's something you're going to be able to upgrade. You know, there's no way the React team is going to refactor and rewrite this and not put out a guide to help people that were using the old APIs figure out what to do and how to reconcile that.
It's not Angular.
I know. That's just what I was thinking of.
Low blow.
Well, my current team that I work on, our initial application was built in Angular 1.5. So we got to that point where Google shut off long-term support and we had to figure out what to do. And the upgrade to Angular 2 was not a straightforward, it was basically going to be a rewrite, whatever we ended up doing. So we switched to React at that point, which I'm very glad of, and I like it a lot more. But yeah, exactly. The React team so far has been great in making backwards compatibility a thing of very high importance, as well as not saying this works for 99% of our use cases, but this one edge case, which of course will be much more vocal and upset if it doesn't handle it. They've been really good about not releasing stuff when it's really just not ready to be out there for everybody. And I'm sure I'm sure that Facebook is a fantastic testing ground for that kind of stuff, being as big and complicated as it is.
Yeah, well,
They were really thoughtful about their moving from IE, or I think dropping support for IE, early versions of IE, which, you know, it depends on how old those Home Depot laptops are, but you know, maybe that stung you, maybe it didn't. But yeah, I remember that was a big deal for us at, I think it was Walmart, where, you know, we were really worried about IE 8, and it was fine at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to the good old it depends for some of these techniques, because I even remember back when I was looking into React server components, and I got into it and I realized, this is largely for Facebook solving like Facebook scale problems because like there's a difference between like, you know, at the lower end of the tier where you have like your own personal site where it's like, well, whatever, as long as it works, things are great, to up to like you have your internal site where it's more important that things work probably than things are like ultra optimized. Then I think to your next level, it's like you've got a public facing site, some sort of store where performance probably actually in that context does matter a whole lot, because the faster users can use your site, can check out, that'll go into real money. And then I think at the ultra end, you've got like Facebook where they can afford to throw 30 engineers at shaving off 10 milliseconds on the page load, because at their scale with a billion users, it's like, oh, that'll lead to like millions of more ad views and make us $1 billion, right? So I think that's another thing to be careful of, is make sure you don't get, you can over-engineer the crap out of your site when sometimes you're better off shipping features that your users want. And I think it's just something to be aware of. It's something that is hard to sometimes make decisions about, but I would just caution people to be careful of knowing the problem you're actually trying to solve and whether the engineering you're going to do is worth the investment.
Well, there's always the question of, is React really the right answer for the problem that you're trying to solve? Because I know as JavaScript developers, we see everything as something that can be solved with JavaScript, and that's not always the right answer. It may be that a Vue site is better suited to you, or even something like a Hugo, or just a plain HTML, CSS, with a few sprinklings of JavaScript it just really depends.
Yeah. I think that's especially true in this static site world, just because lots of times, like, you could be writing a blog and does your blog really need React, right? Like, I mean, there are solutions like Gatsby, which does a number of cool things. And if Gatsby helps optimize your blog, then great, right? Like that's cool. But you might not necessarily need it if at the end of the day, all you're rendering is a bunch of HTML pages. There are tools like, what's like 11D. There's some other ones out there that you might not need React at all if you're really building something simple.
Yeah. There's even WordPress, which I know everybody recoils from, but powers so much of the internet anyway.
Right? Is that on PHP or Node? I don't know which anymore. They've been PHP. Changing around.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, still on that? All right.
Think so.
React is definitely getting to that space of being so ubiquitous that it's running into the jQuery JavaScript thing, where people thought jQuery is sort of built into JavaScript. It was so everywhere. And now people, they think like, oh, well, if I'm going to make a website, it's just going to be React. React is how you build websites. And that's certainly not the case. There's lots of, like, as an example, like, there's Svelte, and I think they've got their own static site generation stuff, and that creates very, very small bundles. And you can also do something like, think about using Next to render the page, but chop off the JavaScript bundle and maybe put in some vanilla JavaScript if you really don't need a lot of interaction on the actual page, right? Then you can have it render the tags for you and just be like a really nice tag generator, and then add on later the JavaScript that actually just moves the customer around. And then you've got a really lightweight bundle and you're not doing that reconcile.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for Core Web Vitals? Fortunately, Raygun can help. These modern performance metrics play an important role in determining the health of your website, which is why Raygun has baked them directly into their real user monitoring tools. Now you can see your Core Web Vital scores are trending across your entire website in real time and drill into individual pages to focus your efforts on the biggest performance gains. Unlike traditional tools, Raygun surfaces real user data, not synthetic, giving you greater insights and control. Filter your score by time frame, browser, device, geolocation, whatever matters to you most. And what makes Raygun truly unique is the level of detail they provide so you can take action. Quickly identify and resolve front-end performance issues with full waterfall breakdowns, user session data, instance-level diagnostics of every page request, and a whole lot more. Visit Raygun.com today and take control of your Core Web Vitals. Plans start from as little as $8 per month. That's Raygun.com for your free 14-day trial.
I will say, though, one benefit of using React is that we have a lot of awesome tools for helping us for these sorts of things. Because nowadays I've been doing React for so long, I haven't kept as good of track as some of these other frameworks. But off the top of my head, I don't know a really good static site generator for Angular. I'm positive they exist and they're out there, but like, and this, the same thing, like, I don't know if there's like a Next.js equivalent for Angular or Vue. So in a sense, we're kind of spoiled because we have, like, I think it's sort of a function of React being big and popular. It doesn't make it necessarily the best choice for everything, but it does mean that we have some really awesome tools out there for solving these problems that other frameworks don't necessarily have.
It does. And at the same time, there's really been this low code movement that seems to be taking off more and more for the people who have ideas or have products or have things that they want to put out there, but don't have the developer chops to build it from scratch like developers always want to do, myself included. I built my own website using Gatsby and it was great and I love everything about it. I'm super proud of it. But if you just need a site that is like, here's a contact me form, here's a little bit about my company and what we do or whatever, there's a whole bunch of good options that are out there now. It's not just the Squarespaces or the Wix or the things like that that we hear about. It's much more tailored and customizable and drag and drop, kind of clipping pieces together to make exactly what you want, which is awesome. And another competitor to everything that we've just talked about, but it also brings with it all of that, the benefits that we want with something like server-side rendered or static site generated without people having to think about it again. It's just built into the product itself, which is cool.
You're never gonna have to worry about a server going down on your personal site, right? You know, and there's no security concerns. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've had a WordPress site hacked, you know, and you come back later like, really? Okay, I gotta clean this up again, you know, kind of thing. You're never gonna get that with the static site generation stuff. So for personal stuff, that's absolutely the way to go. And with Create React App, that's basically what it does when you do a yarn build. Basically, get a build directory. You just put up on GitHub Pages or wherever you want to put it, and boom, you got a site, and you never have to worry about it going down or getting hacked.
At the same time, though, if you're building like something for a client or a company that's going to be maintained by that client or company, you know, good luck building a Gatsby site and having this company's marketing team able to update content on the page or push out a new blog post or change the color scheme sort of thing. So like, I totally agree, like static site, like build your Gatsby site for your personal stuff. But I think, I mean, there's a reason WordPress is popular, right? Like it solves like those sorts of problems really, really well. And I know there's some push to get some of those tools into the JavaScript world. I think Gatsby just raised like an obscene amount of money because I think they're building some of this sort of stuff, but it's still very much in its infancy. Like these JavaScript-based tools can't compete with with what like the WordPresses and some of these other CMSs have to offer for that sort of thing.
Yeah, headless CMS is huge now. And I listen to some other tech podcasts and I hear them advertising. There's Butter CMS, there's Prisma, there's Sanity is a big one. There's so many. But that's a great option if you do have a client that will be managing it and they don't have a web development team or they want their marketing team to be able to push out new content, new products, whatever. Hooking up a headless CMS to a very lightweight front-end framework that just will template and generate whatever they want. You know, you just put in the correct inputs and bam, you've got your new product page up or you've got your new blog post out. It's a great option. It's a lot less work on our end as long as we can understand and correctly train them on how to use it and how to fix problems when something doesn't format right the first time. And then you know that there's a lot more, I guess, stability and customer service behind those types of things too. It's not just going to be you who knows how to do it and knows that you need to tweak this particular setting to get it to work right. It's a whole team and a whole company supporting it, pushing out new features, keeping it updated and secure and safe and all those good things.
Yeah, I know there's also services that let you, they're almost like places of storing content. So essentially you build out your site with whatever technology and then you almost like, well, you could server render it or you could bring them in, like grab chunks of content that somebody else is maintaining and sort of jigsaw them into whatever you're building as well.
Yeah, I think I saw a presentation with a guy using Storyblocks and Gatsby, I want to say. And so the idea was Storyblocks had the content, right? Nice WYSIWYG, it's beautiful. You could change your articles and all that sort of stuff. And you hit save. And then that would fire off, I guess, maybe a webhook or something like that over to probably, you know, maybe Versal or maybe Git. I don't know what his particular thing was, but you can imagine like you basically just do an incremental build process where you then go and grab that one particular piece of content, you recycle the page, repush it, and now there you go. And you've got, again, a very secure system. So it's like from the front end, they're still just static pages and that's great. But then to actually make those changes, then you got to actually log in, authenticated to Storyblocks. And I don't think that makes a great hacking opportunity for folks.
Yeah, I think another interesting thing about all this stuff is I think the lines are getting a little bit blurry between these technologies, like in terms of like what's the client, what's the server, what's statically generated. Like it's hard to put things, like I feel like years ago you could like cleanly put things in bubbles and they're like clearly one approach, but nowadays, like what even is next? Because it kind of does all of these things in a way, right? So, and you could sort of choose your own adventure for a while. So I think we're past the days of you pick Angular, you pick Vue, you pick React, and like you let the client go from there. Now it's like you've got this, it's both a good and a bad thing. It's good because like you can make better apps than you used to be able to 3 or 4 years ago because these tools are doing some awesome things. But I think the downside is just the complexity it brings to your average developer. Like the reason why we felt the need to have this topic today is because there's lots of questions. I mean, I hear about this all the time and I'm still very much learning about all of this stuff because none of us have infinite time to build with all of these things. So it's a good and a bad thing.
So if you were getting started for the first time with one of these things, you knew you needed static site generation or server side, what do you think is the best option for somebody who's just brand new to the space, but knows that that's something that they need to get started with? Would you recommend Next? Would you recommend Gatsby? Would you do something else entirely? What do you think?
Oh man, it's going to be again, like it depends on what you're building, but I think like something with static sites is probably the best starting point just because like it's if you haven't built like a personal website or you, or sort of thing, like those are the perfect types of candidates for a static site approach, like a simple blog. I don't think you can go wrong with Gatsby. Like even if you end up not liking it, it's a really good experience to have. If you're listening to this, I can presume you have some either interest or experience with React. And I think that's been the good thing about Gatsby is you can leverage those skills. There's new things to learn, but you'll know the React bits of it. Mm-hmm. And I think like just any sort of static site generation process is good to go through just so you can understand the high level, like what it's doing, because it is a little bit weird if you haven't done it before to say like, oh, like at runtime, I'm pushing out, like I end up with just some like static files I can toss to some server and that's my full deploy process. Like it's all baked in and the build sort of controls all of that. And I think like, even if it's a site that you're just going to throw away, just going through that process of building something up just to see how it works is pretty valuable. So I'd say probably start there.
It is kind of hilarious. We're all ending up back in like 1995 again. It's all about statting, making that those static files and pushing them onto a server. It's like, well, it's old as new again. Yeah, for the beginner, I would second, you know, use Gatsby if you want to learn static site generation. I think the Next.js model is great for doing one of those things where you're grabbing a catalog of stuff and then rendering it. And it's, you know, sort of more industrial. If you just want to get on like a blog, Gatsby is great for that. If you want to, I don't think there's any other choice other than Next.js for doing server-side rendering. So if that's a thing, then go for that. But, you know, if it's just my own project, if it's going to be an app, I'm going to use Create React App, right? And then there you go, maybe push it to GitHub Pages. And if it's a library, there's, I did want to throw in on this that I'd use maybe something like Storybook and render to that. But also when you're making a library, there's just one little gotcha when it comes to server-side rendering. Just, you know, you find this great component, it's beautiful carousel, really well-crafted, and then you put it into your server-side rendering app. And it's like, next thing you know, Next is telling you, oh, it uses Window. And you're like, oh no, it uses Window. I can't use this. And one, I strongly recommend, okay, so here's the issue. Window doesn't exist in Node, right? And since your code, your React code is running in Node when it's rendering on the server, right? If you use Window directly in your code or document, it's not going to work. And all you got to do is, it's just so simple to add a little type of, you know, you use type of Window is not equal to undefined as a string. And then you just wrap your code in that. And that makes it server-side renderable. It's literally like that. So if you find that beautiful carousel as a consumer, PR that code, be part of the community, help the community out, add that in that little bit, like, hey, you know, I was trying to use this great carousel, it doesn't render on a server, here's a one-line fix. And there you go. But yeah, so if you're gonna build those libraries, then yeah, Storybook, and just make sure that it's SSR usable.
Reminds me of when I was researching React server components, there's a big, one of the things the React team does in their documentation is they have this big block of like, these are the things you can't do with server components. And the very first one on the list is you can't use state, which at the top of your head, like, wait, I'm building components with no state. How does that even work? But then you think about it, it's like, oh yeah, that's right. This is running on a server. So it can't, it's not going to keep state, right? Because like the browser is going to send a request and then it comes back and then the server is going to forget all about that. So you, like, use state would make no sense there, but it's weird how it just messes with your mind for just a minute, because you get so accustomed to writing components a certain way. And like, now there's a different model. And that's why I think just like doing it once, just so you have it in the back of your head. Cause I think once you've tried it once, then in future apps, when you're going to building something, you can have that moment of like, oh, hey, server rendering might be nice to use here, sort of thing, is sort of, I think, a valuable thing to just have in your toolbox.
Yeah, and on resume.
Yeah, resume.
That's a great point. Yeah. I mean, that I felt the same way when I was learning how to use hooks within React. Like, I was not a super early adopter of them. And they just, it was so hard to kind of disassociate component life cycles and how classes had been the only holders of state. Now you just passed props wherever you needed to the child components. But once I started really getting into it and having the opportunity to experience it, building little apps and working on my project at work, because we started using hooks as we built new features and new pages and things like that, it starts to make sense, and you start to recognize those patterns, or where you might be able to use context instead, or where a use effect here, or we could take this function and extract it into a custom hook. But it's all just experience. That's the only way to get better at this stuff and really start to be able to recognize that kind of thing. And then server side, it'll probably be exactly the same.
Yep.
Building on top of that, when it comes to hooks, if you really want to learn them, I recommend learning how to manage state completely without a state manager, just using hooks alone, using state, using context. I mean, I'm sure, Paige, you've gone through this, that experience of using them exclusively, like, really gets you into the pattern, like, understanding, okay, this is how dependency arrays work, and this is what's going to happen when this changes. And that's it, it's interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I learned so much about how React works under the hood from having weird stuff happen with hooks. Like, I learned how asynchronous use state was, updating state and setting state. I learned weird things with use effect as well, and how you could put one in front of the other and different things would happen because it really is reading just straight down the code. Yeah, it's been a good experience. I mean, it was painful and I couldn't figure out why things were going wrong. But once I finally started to understand that what was a little bit more of what was happening in the background, yeah, it was great. And now I can see how much cleaner our code can be when we can take a single use effect instead of having component did mount, component should update, you know, component should unmount, all those different lifecycle hooks that were basically doing the same thing, but just couldn't be a single function.
Yeah. And you learn a lot about JavaScript closures in all of this. It's huge. You know, if you skip the section in the book on closures, you're going to be relearning it really quick when you get into all these hooks, because you're capturing that state at various points in that use effect. Like, an example I use is on one of my videos is around building a timer. You know, just wrapping a set interval inside of a use effect gets some really weird edge cases. And when you can work through that, then you have an understanding about how all this stuff is put together and actually works. But you got to go through that and figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, all of React is pretty much closures when you start to think about the components themselves. We have state that's accessible by everything within that component. And then you have to figure out how to get it to other components as well. But yeah, it's all functions.
Yeah. And all kind of captured, weirdly captured functions. And it's like, I think there's two things that trip people up about JavaScript and by extension TypeScript is async. I have a lot of folks who want to turn async into synchronous. They're like, how do I get the synchronous? I just feel better synchronous. And you're like, it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen. Asynchronous is never not going to be asynchronous. So just get used to it. And this is a similar sort of thing with closures is they're just fundamental to the language and you can't bypass them. You just have to go with the flow and eventually feel comfortable with them.
And you'll use them and you won't even recognize that you are. That's
right. Yeah. Until they bite you and then you're like, whoa.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything that you think that we haven't covered so far, Jack, about SSR, SSG, anything else?
Yeah, there's so many nooks and crannies in here we could go on all day, but I think let's just go into the things we want to share about that.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. So we're going to move our section, which we call Picks.
Hey, folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
And this is anything. It could be a great TV show, a product, a website that you found that's really cool, or maybe a new library. Would you like to start us off today?
Sure. I was thinking about this morning and I was like, oh, you know, maybe Loki. And then that's a little bit too easy. And then I was actually on, I've gotten to be so geeky about this. There are YouTube live channels that monitor what's going on at SpaceX in Boca Chica. And I was watching this one and I can't believe I was watching it. It was a live stream, 4 hours long, of them basically putting like a cold pressure tank test. And all you see is this tank of metal with ice forming up around it and then coming back down again. 4 hours of this. And they're talking over the entire time about it. And I'm like, that's actually really amazing to me that they come up with 4 hours of content to watch a steel tank get cold and then get warm again. So we'll put a link to that in the description if you want to geek out on that.
Nice. Well, I'll jump off of that space topic. There's a great app. I think it's an Apple TV show called For All Mankind. That we started watching that, my husband and I, couple weeks ago probably, and have already gone through the first two seasons, but it's fantastic. And
oh, it is. I love that show.
Yeah. So the premise of it, for anybody who hasn't seen it, is what if the Soviets were the first ones into space and the first to, they beat us to the moon. Basically, they beat America to landing on the moon first, and how that might have changed the course of history for NASA, for astronauts, for basically everyone who was participating in the space race. And it gets better the further you go into it, and the more you kind of see history taking different turns than what actually has happened. So I'd highly recommend that for anybody.
Yeah, and so then, NASA kind of goes on, right? They continue on with their development. Yeah,
NASA goes on. Women astronauts become a thing much earlier than they do for us. Yeah, it's really fantastic what they do. So in addition to that, I actually have another pick, which is the Sonicare toothbrush. I went to the dentist yesterday and just had my regular checkup. And one thing that they commented on, because I've had it now for about 6 months, I got it for Christmas and have been using it pretty religiously since, was how much better my tartar control and the plaque buildup was. And I don't think it's any fancier than most other electric toothbrushes, but it has a little timer. So, you know, you've done 2 minutes. It vibrates every 30 seconds. So you can know that you should switch to another part of your mouth and run it there. And it's just pretty neat. So if you're looking for anything like that to keep your teeth and gums healthy, I would definitely say it's a good one.
Yeah, I just got my teeth done a couple of days ago, and it was a similar sort of thing. But I need to switch back to an electric and be more diligent about it for sure. And it's amazing. I'm sure a lot of folks are going to the dentist for the first time in a year now, and it's an interesting experience. Like,
right. It's always, I've been lucky so far in that I've been able to keep going pretty regularly, even through the pandemic. But you're always wondering in the back of your head, what are they going to find?
Every time, that little pain, whatever. That kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
good
cool.
Dental health. That's really important.
I know. For everybody, who's listening, try and get to your dentist. I know it's a little scary for some people, but really, they want to help you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Cool. So we'll have some links in the show notes for anybody who is interested in learning more about server-side rendering, static site generation, all that good stuff. And I guess we will see you all next week.
See ya.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.